Welcome to The Huddle, the podcast where we get coaches of all levels share their experience and vision with you. Today is another special episode. Our following coach works at Spire Institute, where Belgian talent pick to go the place. Coach Jeff Sparrow gives us some inside information on his well-known defensive philosophy. Enjoy The Huddle.
Hey coaches, welcome in a new episode of The Huddle, episode 25. So it means that we go abroad again with a foreign coach. And today we are in Ohio because we are welcoming in Coach Jeff Sparrow from Spire Institute. Hi, Coach. How are you doing? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me.
No, you're welcome. No, thanks for taking some time because as I spoke to you before, in our latest podcast, we all always talk about fundamentals, offensive skill developments, but we didn't talk about defensive philosophy and development a lot. So that's why I thought about you. So I really appreciate you taking some time with us to talk basketball and more specifically talk defense. Coach, you're now the head coach of the basketball men's team at the Spire Institute in Ohio. But yeah, you have had a career as a player yourself and you've been in Australia. Maybe you can introduce yourself to the coaches.
Yeah. So again, thank you for having me. I'm Jeff Sparrow. I am the head coach currently at Spire Institute and Academy, their postgraduate program. So a lot of people, this space can be very, very misconstrued. There's prep schools, there's postgraduate programs. My team in particular is kids who have graduated high school and need another year for whatever many, many reasons. Could be just another year to put on some weight. It could be another year to improve their skills. It could be another year to change a grade or two so academically they can qualify for a four-year institution. So we have different kids for different reasons here, but my team is a postgraduate program. Spire Institute and Academy is known globally because of LaMelo Ball. And more recently, Isaiah Jackson, who's playing for the Pacers, is having a solid year. So those two kind of put it on the map. But Spire is a very, very new entity. It's only been around for about a dozen years. Beautiful facility. It's backed by the people that created IMG Academy. So, you know, they have the right blueprint here, the facilities, the resources. It's phenomenal, this place. So I'm very fortunate to be here. But, you know, in a nutshell, how I got here is a wild ride. And much like I think a lot of us coaches, it's never linear or the same. And I'll try to keep it brief for you. But I was a 25-year-old head coach at a public school in Pennsylvania for a year. And during that time, I had created a defensive skill development program known as Point Blank Period, which I was doing off to the side. And I was training players. I was talking to other high schools, other coaches about the defensive end. And during that time, a bunch of kids started to come to me from a program called Reading High School. And Reading High School is known in Pennsylvania. It's the biggest high school in Pennsylvania, public school. And from that moment, they started coming to me for training. Their head coach said, hey, if my kids are coming to you, why don't you come to us and join our staff and be on staff at Reading High? So I got on board at Reading High School. I was fortunate enough in my first year to be a part of a state championship team, the first state championship in Reading High history. We were led by a kid that many probably would know on this podcast. His name is Lonnie Walker. He plays for the San Antonio Spurs right now. And from that moment after that state title, my road just got crazy because people wanted to talk defense and know why we're playing this way, why our stance is this way and how we talk. And from there, it took me overseas. I took about 12 trips to Australia in 3 years. And then I finally settled down in Australia, got a head coaching job at a semi-pro level and was not planning on returning. But unfortunately, 2 days before my first game, COVID hit. And I had to put the season on hold, and then I had to lose my job, and then I had to come back to America at 33 years old without a program. And I was fortunate enough to land at Spire through a random conversation, random basketball environment, sitting down, just watching a game. And it's funny how things happen. So,
nice story, Coach. Nice. Thanks for sharing.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you talked about Spire. I think in Belgium, a lot of coaches and players know, or I mean, Spire will ring a bell because there's a Belgian guy playing at your team, Vic. Can you talk about him a little bit? How is he going? How is his development going?
Yeah, great question. First off, I love Vic. I love Vic, you know, all on and off the court. Great kid. Love to coach him. Love to be around him. And I'm glad we were able to make it happen for him. When he got here in August, it was culture shock. And you know, what Vic already had is what I knew. He had the ability to shoot. He was very skilled, could pass it, savvy, smart, understood the game. The biggest adjustment for him took probably until January. So you're talking September, October, November, December, January, a good 4 or 5 month stretch for him to understand that, Vic, when your shot doesn't go in, who are you as a basketball player? What do you bring to the table for us? Because at this level, in this space, it is as gritty and tough as you could possibly be. And what I value and what we need in order to be successful is kids who want to sit in a stance and box out in the back door. Okay. This isn't good enough to box out a kid who's 6'8", 220, who's fighting for a scholarship like you are. You got to sit in a stance and work him. You know, we need kids who sprint the floor. We need kids who understand how to screen effectively. We're not dodging screens. We're not slipping. We're trying to body on body contact and hit people in our offense. So I think once Vic realized, man, coach really doesn't care if I make my first five or miss my first five, but I'm going to play if I do these little things. Well, it started to click to him, you know, in January. So he took on a bigger role. We started to start him. He had a very big game versus IMG in Florida, hit a couple big threes for us. But more importantly, he started to dictate the game on the defensive end. He's 6'7", he's long, but he never used his length. And I think that was a problem for him. Give me 1 second. I have a call coming in. Sorry, guys.
No, it's okay.
So, no, you know, and I think now he understands his habits need to continue to improve. So no matter if your shot's going in or not, we need you to look the same in terms of your activeness and your ability to fight in the back door and box out and do those little things. And it took him a while, no doubt, but he's doing well. College coaches have taken notice. And I think he's going to be on the cusp of a full scholarship here at the end of the year, depending on how the dominoes, you know, go with the coaching staffs and other programs.
No, great, great. And looking back at your experience in Australia, I think it was Melbourne.
Yes.
Yeah. What is like the biggest culture shock for you, or the biggest difference between Australian basketball and USA basketball?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And to be honest with you, I can't pinpoint one thing because it's such a grand scope, right? Like there's some Australian kids that at the top, they remind you of an inner city kid from Philly or New York or Chicago. And then you have, you know, the other end of the spectrum, the casual, I kind of like the game, but we only practice twice a week, Australian culture. And then you have that middle road. So I would say the biggest thing, though, for me was, and maybe I can put it into a quick story that would help people understand. When I first flew down and took the job, I asked my team, I said, we're going 14 straight days. We're going 14 straight days, no day off. Yeah. And I had people looking at each other in a meeting room, like, is this guy playing with us? Is he joking? Is he serious? And I was dead serious, you know, because I wanted to vet out who was casual about the game and who loved it. I flew across the world to take this job. I don't need people that are casual about it. And I think that was a big deal to them. It's just the overall commitment 365 days of the year that would be a little bit different. But again, that the breadth of talent down there is unbelievable. I mean, you have skilled kids, you have tall kids, you have athletic kids, you have everything you want and need down there. It's just a little bit more of a laid back atmosphere. And then the other part of that would be academically, just the overall scope of school. It's a little more laid back. And I think they fail to realize at times that is your ticket to a university here is you need to qualify. You need to have the right grades. So those two in particular.
Nice. Getting back to your site, I don't know if it's your site job or your site organization, Point Blank period. Maybe you can talk about the philosophy division later on, but as soon as you pop on that website, there's a video starting off, and the first thing you say is, we're living in a microwave society. Explain, coach.
Yeah. So, man, it's tough to relate to. And, you know, what I mean by that is just the impatience and the unwillingness to dig in and create your own lane. And that might take a little longer, but the the kind of the reluctantness to say, you know what, I'm going to carve out my own role and I'm going to do it my own way. And I'm going to fight a little harder today when it's not going my way. And I just see that in every lane in the basketball space, from transfers to AAU kids playing, you know, three games with one team on a Saturday and then three games with another team on a Sunday because they lost on Saturday. That's tough for me to relate to. You know, I come from a place where I literally paved my own path with Point Blank period. And that took me here and here and here. Nobody handed that to me. Nobody said, hey, coach, be a 25-year-old head coach. I knocked on doors and took an interview with no one I knew. There was 14 people on a school board. I'm a 25-year-old, you know, aspiring head coach. They looked at me like, this guy's nuts. But I went and I went after it. You know, I went after my dreams. And that's tough for me to relate to. I'm seeing it over and over. Heck, we had a kid here who didn't play early on. And about 3 months in, he had just turned the corner and started to take minutes from other people. And he was about to play a big role for us. Mm-hmm. And dad took him out of school. And, you know, it's one of those situations where it's tough. It's tough for me to relate to. I don't know if necessarily I want to relate to the microwave society at this point, because I'm cut from a cloth of let's go work and earn it. And you know, my two best friends are in a situation where they're 12 years overseas and they didn't play until their junior years of college. So they didn't transfer on themselves. They didn't quit on themselves. They kept chipping away. So it's tough, but it is what it is. And you have to understand the game at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Yeah, Mike, you had a question for Jeff about his the defensive development or philosophy.
Yeah, we want to know more about like Gunnar already told us, we don't talk a lot about defense, and I think it's very important. We have to talk more about defense. So we want to ask you, what are the main points? Where do you start with your defensive philosophy? What is the key for you? Where do you start?
Yeah, good question. So every program I've been a part of, whether it be a head coach or an assistant, we try to lay the foundation early, day one, and we try to build in our preseason the foundation of our defensive program. And number one, that's the POA. We call it the POA, the point of attack, the ability for me to stay in front of you, to chest you out, to make you dribble somewhere that I wanted you to go. You know, the area that I'm showing you is where I want to take you, not where I reactively am going to move. So for instance, if I'm playing defense on you, Mike, and you jab and I move, that goes against everything we do. We never want to react to the offensive guy. We're already moving. We're giving you different looks with our lead foot. We're trying to make you put that ball into the space that we provide. So winning the point of attack is a big deal for us. It's a staple of our program. We chart it. We'll say, Mike, you were 5 of 9 at the point of attack last night. 4 times you got too close. You didn't understand space. He opened your top foot. And now we played rotational basketball. So we're trying to be over 75% at the point of attack. It's tough. In particular, it's tough when you have taller guys like we do this year. We're playing a lot more zone, but being able to keep your shape and winning the point of attack, not playing in rotation, is one. Number two, how effectively do we communicate? So every coach in America, you walk into any gym, I'm sure you hear guys yelling, talk, 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 talk. But, you know, for me, it's how do you teach your kids what to say, when to say it, in what tone, how many times. So for us, we say early and often, action and location, and clear and concise. We want to be the best communicators on the court. And it's big. You know, there's a lot of different actions coming our way, back screens and flip screens and ghosts have taken over the game. And if you mess up one communication on them, it's a wide open three, and it, you know, that's on you. So, and then lastly is how you rotate, right? And I said this to about, I don't know, almost every coach I've ever spoken to. It's not my way or the highway, to each his own. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. For us, we do it. We break down drills every single day for months on end. We chart it. We make it fun. We make it cool. We make sure kids realize that that's probably what a college coach is going to see to make you fit out more so than if you have 3 threes and then he watches 10 more films of new kids who have 3 threes. So we want to make sure they understand, like, this isn't just Coach Sparrow being crazy and loving defense. This is number one. The best way I think you can win is making sure you have a great team that understands the point of attack, knows how to communicate and rotate. But number two, as a basketball player, you are who you can guard. And at the end of games, I need to trust the people that'll win the point of attack for me. I need to trust that they communicate effectively, and I need to trust that they understand our scheme. So this is everything for us. It's not just a one-off or, you know, he's a defensive guy. I teach offense. I love offense, but we think that this is the best way to get the job done. So
I really like the thing of not playing rotational basketball, when you call it, because I'm a coach. I coach also a lot of teams, and it's always they think about rotation and they don't think about the one-on-one defense. That's the more important thing. And can you give me some examples? How do you do this in practice? How are you going to do this in practice? You say, okay, we have to play on the one-on-one defense. You always do the one-on-one, or you do two-on-two or three-on-three?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we're very detailed with it. The point of attack is my baby. It's what I've charted. We have five rules that we try to teach. Number one, be proactive, not reactive. Number two, don't jump. Number three, know your personnel. Number four, know when to create space. When you see a chest and I'm being strong, we want to create some space. If we see a hip, we close space. So those are big rules for us. And then, you know, I'm going to hold off on the last rule for now, because we don't like to give out all the goods all at once. But it's a big deal for us. But more importantly, Mike, we drill in one-on-one situations, triple threat one-on-one, live dribble one-on-one, transition one-on-one, post one-on-one, and close out one-on-one if we are in rotation. So we are fine-tuning each sector of kind of those one-on-one areas where we think they're going to happen in a game. And depending on who we're playing and how we're playing, for instance, in transition, we're two body lengths away. We want to make a proactive move. We never want to do it with our hand too close to somebody. They have a full head of steam. So if you're two body lengths away from me, I might just switch my stance. If you're two body lengths away from me, I might create some space. And those are the type of little details and kind of tools that we give our guys, because it's not fair. This game isn't fair. Everybody learns all these tricks offensively, in and out, behind the back, and cross jab. And then these defensive kids, you have to sit there and be reactive against that. That's not what we want. We want to make sure that we equip them with certain things that we think can help them dictate that one-on-one situation.
Nice, nice. And yeah, one thing you said, I think that's one of the biggest challenges for coaches, and especially young coaches. You said, I try to make those defensive drills as fun as possible, because defense shouldn't be boring on practice. It isn't on game, because you can win games with it, definitely. But sometimes you see drills that are really boring, and yeah, players aren't focused, not motivated, and yeah, then the development stops. So I like that you mentioned it. Can you give us like an example of a fun drill to stimulate communication, for example?
Well, that you just hit it on the head. So I have over 50 drills that I created to make them more fun, because defense can be mundane. It can be monotonous. It can, you know, for instance, shell drill. Shell drill has a purpose, but shell drill, the way some coaches are coaching it, is elementary. It's boring. It's repetitive. For us, we have a certain type of shell drill called 4-on-4 crisscross help the helper. But within this shell drill, we communicate in different phrases and in different directions, and we can change that drill up. So we could run that drill for a month, but we could do something different every single day within that drill in terms of the communication piece. And that just adds a flavor to it that just keeps these guys engaged, keeps them thinking, oh, yesterday was left and right. Today is switch, switch. Got it. I messed up the communication. 10 push-ups, stay in the shell drill, keep going, keep working, keep being active. So there's certain ways to spice it up. But for me, it's just been really more so how we compute it at the end. How are we charting it, or how are we competing with it? So is a stop 1 point, or is it 4 points? We take a charge in our program, that's 5 points right away. So we have to find ways to glorify it. For instance, at the end of each week, we have a point of attack king. So we'll say, Mike, you are 92% at the point of attack this week in practice. We're going to put a crown on your head, a cape on you, and you get to walk around campus with that all day. So we have to make it fun. But to your point, there's different communication pieces to every one of our drills. And I think that's really been kind of where they understand it. It's an intellectual drill. We have to be locked in and focused. But more than that, it's usually harder than in game. there's usually a lot more movement and zigzagging and communicating and bodies bumping than in a game where it's probably heavy pick and roll or dribble drive basketball anyway around here. So,
yeah. No, correct. One other aspect that's really big or really important in defense is a good closeout. I see in Belgium that coaches have a different vision of a closeout. People talking about you need big steps, you got to sprint, you got your hands up. Other coaches talking about choppy steps. What's your philosophy on a closeout?
Okay, this is a fantastic segue because I want to get back to what Mike said. We're talking the first, I'll give you an example. I was at a Division I school last year and they wanted to dive into philosophy and coach, how do you teach support? But the very first thing they asked me on the court, very first thing they asked me is, well, how are you closing out? How are you rotating? And I said, hold on now. I said, I just charted your game. I charted one of their previous games and they were 14 of 31 at the point of attack. So 17 times they were playing in rotation because they didn't understand technique at the start of that possession in order to chest somebody out. So they were constantly losing the point of attack. And more often than not, out of those 17 losses, it was because of lack of understanding of space. So I said to them, before we talk about closeouts and rotation, mm-hmm. let's talk about your technique up top. And let's say that they were 25 of 31 at the point of attack. Okay. So my question to you guys would be, you have 2 hours in a practice, you're a head coach. Are you putting more emphasis on those six losses at the point of attack? Now that you know how to guard the point of attack, are you worried about those six losses because of closeout technique and how we rotate? Or are you putting more emphasis on those 31 overall point of attacks and hoping that you're winning over 80% of them? Because for me, closeouts is one of the most, not the most heavily harped on part of our defense, because we hope that we are not in those positions to begin with. But to answer your question, it would be, we start very ground level. Like if I'm at the back door drop, so if a wing drive is coming this direction or corner drives coming this direction, our initial help, we call it the front door. It's just the way we kind of coined it. You're at the front door of help, but I'm the back door drop. I'm on the weak side block, back door drop. We teach one step, no more than two, to break down. And we do that because if we played in rotation already, then it's our fault that we have to rotate. Let's not compound the mistake by flying at a shooter and then playing another segment of rotation. Now, that's how we start it, and that's how we drill it. We want the foundation of our house to be that. But you're talking late February here, and now we have a scouting report with two 45% three-point shooters. It has to become a personnel thing. So we have taught, you know, to ride by the stride stop shooter, run them off the line situation. But again, for me, that is not heavy emphasis because we hope that we're above 75% at the point of attack anyway. What I will say, though, is the high hands thing that I see and me being a kind of thinking I'm still a good basketball player at this point in my life, which I'm probably not, but defensively I'm okay. Every time my hands go up, my body follows. It's tough for me to get in a stance and push step and win the point of attack. So we say big hands and wide hands. Body follows the hands. So when I come out on my close, I might have one hand up, one hand out, but I'm really worried about stretching my width. I want to win and have my body follow my hands. So that's kind of the two phrases we use there.
I love the part of tracking how many times you get beaten. For me, I always tell my team, we're not beaten on the first dribble. This is something we don't do. But I never thought about tracking this. After I always film the game, and maybe I have to do it one day to tell them, okay, we've been beaten this many times. We get it this many times in the rotation. I really like it. And maybe I have to do it more now to get this information for my players, because now I just say, okay, we don't get beaten, but they don't know how many times they get beaten, and we always do the normal things to track, and like how many shots you made, offensive boards. But this is something really important to tell your players: you get beaten 17 times. This is too much, because we have to go 17 times in rotation. And rotation gets mismatches, gets open threes, open layups.
So, Mike, I'll take it one step further there. this was something. Now there's a ton of factors in the game, right? It's not just the point of attack, but we will say win the POA, win the day, because we think that if we're winning it at a high percentage, we're giving ourselves a very good chance at winning that basketball game. But my 3 years at Reading High, my first year when I was there full time, we were 30-3. In our three losses, we were under 70% at the point of attack. In our 30 wins, we were above 70%. So, you know, there is a direct correlation there. Now, my next year at Reading High, we were 25-5. In those five losses, we were below 70%. We got beat off the bounce, and we were playing rotational basketball. Now, is that going to be the same every single game all the time? There's a ton of factors. But, man, when I started to chart it and I started to see it, it was pretty eye-opening to me. And then on top of that, Mike, when those kids see those numbers, and I knew we were doing something right when I heard two kids conversate one time. They didn't know I was around the corner. They said, man, I was at least 7 of 8 at the POA last night. I want to see my percentage. When they start talking in that language, you know you got them. And you know that culture is being instilled. So they didn't wake up after win and say, hey, I had 15-7 with 4 threes. They were talking about their POA percentage. And that to me was like, ooh, we're on to something here.
Mm-hmm. No, Debbie. I never heard a player or in Belgium saying after a game, man, tonight I had 5 stops or 6 stops. I like this. Yeah, it's maybe something we should focus more on. Maybe in the States, it's something more. Because about hustle plays as well in defense. I saw an open practice on YouTube from one of college team. Can't remember if it was Division 1 or Division 2 team. And during practice, they were keeping track of everything. Offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, steals, turnovers, and hustle plays. So, yeah, and that was the first time I saw something like that. And, yeah, maybe, as we always say in Belgium, in Dutch we say meten is weten. It's measuring is knowledge. I don't know how you say it. If you measure things, it's important to measure things. Yeah. To keep hold of stats. Do you guys work on hustle? I think it's a stupid question for you guys working on defense all day or each day, but do you reward hustle plays? Because the guy who has had the most hustle plays during a practice in that college team got rewarded as well. So I don't know, you guys focus on something like that particularly?
Well, for me, that has to be a constant, not a variable. You know what I mean? Like if we're seeing that as a variable, we're probably not in a position to be, you know, a ranked basketball team or win the games that we should win. But what I will say is that's when I'm watching every day when I run practice back, because what we have right now is 13 kids who are this close to each other. And the only difference isn't if Vic makes that shot or Jack misses that shot. It's who's out hustling that guy in the 2 hour practice. So not many programs in late February don't know their starting lineup. I don't. I have no idea who I'm going to start tomorrow until practice is done today. So that breeds a heavy, you know, bit of competitiveness at practice, but that's the name of the game. Like our last loss, we were at the back door attempting to rebound, but we weren't driving, squeezing, chinning and having that pursuit and passion enough. So, you know, I'm looking for that. Who wants to pursue a rebound like a maniac, squeezing and chinning? Who wants to hit the floor first? Because when you're playing a commitment from Virginia and a commitment to Princeton and three other, you know, mid-major Division 1 kids, it's at the end of the day, it's who wants it more, you know, and that's, you know, so it's not about rewarding it. If we don't do it, we're getting smacked, you know, and this is not a level where you can take a possession off, let alone a night off. But I will say though, there's another measurable, just to bring it back to Vic and somebody that obviously people know in Belgium, his first 3 steps after a make looked way different than his first 3 steps back defensively after a miss at the beginning of the year. And we couldn't have that. You can't let up transition points in this space. You'll get murdered. So we said, Vic, make or miss. I need that ball to leave your fingers. And it's a full sprint. Your first, not a shake of the head, not a drop of the head, not a, oh man, I stink today. Doesn't matter to us. You shoot that ball, you shoot it with confidence, whether it goes in or out. I don't care. What I care about is that we set our defense so our point of attack can win our day. But that was a big adjustment for him. So we had to chart the first 3 steps and help these guys understand, like, hey, last night you were a B- at the first 3 steps. You're in your head about your air ball. And air ball is a miss. Who cares? You know, and kind of instill that philosophy. But
okay, nice. Coach, talking about work ethic, could you give us like a little insight? How does a practice week look like at Spire?
Well, a day in the life of Spire is pretty cool. They get picked up in a van. They live in beautiful homes right off campus. Nicer homes than I grew up in. I mean, very, very spoiled here. They get breakfast. They come into to the morning workout, and it could be skill development. It could be scheme. It could be just getting shots up, whatever the case may be. It could be film, individual sessions. That's the morning routine. Some guys go to school. Some guys have already qualified and don't go to school. So that just depends. Everybody's on a different path here. But then they'll go to lunch. They'll come out at lunch. Some days they have sports psychology. We have a mental skills coach here that's actually works with the University of Akron Division One men's basketball program. He's phenomenal. They either have that or college counseling in that 1 p.m. slot. Then they go to 1:45 for their lift. Their lift is customized based on their body, their goals, their routine. Then they'll come down on the court for team practice in that 4 to 6 slot. They'll eat. Then they'll get rehab, Normatec sleeves or massages or ice baths, which our kids hate, but I loved them back in the day. And then you wake up and you do it again. That's an in-season day. Obviously, preseason, we do a little more. We might have 2 practices a day just for install purposes. But it's not a military academy. It's a place where if you love the game, this is like the biggest playpen you've ever seen. There's just toys everywhere for you to use, to get better, to put your head down and grow. So it's an amazing place. If I had this when I was 18, I probably wouldn't be talking to either of you right now. I'll say that.
Yeah. What time do they start then in the morning?
They'll get here around 8:30 for breakfast, and then school starts at 9:15.
Yeah, that's
okay. And like, how many games? Because yeah, in Belgium, U teams, they play like 1 game a week, which is not enough if you want to compete with other countries. Even in Europe, you have countries where youth teams play 2-3 games in a week. So how many games do you play a week?
Yeah, good question. I would say on a normal week, we're trying to get 2 or 3 in. But earlier in the year, we took a trip to Florida and we played 6 games in 9 days. So we have a packed schedule. We play a national schedule. We travel. We just got back from a 6-day road trip. And we will probably end our season with 35 plus games when it's all said and done.
Okay. No, that's great. And now that you're the head coach at Spire, do you still have time for your point blank period? Or
yeah, good question. Good question. It's been so hectic with COVID, right? Yeah. So I was in Australia, I came back, gyms are closed. So obviously that's not a great situation when you own a business and gyms were closed. But for me, I put that on to the side and really onto the back burner because I needed people, you know, in this space to understand that I am a basketball coach. And I think a lot of people put the trainer hat on you and that's okay. I understand that was the path I was going, but you know, I'm more than that. In my opinion, I love the game. I love bringing 14, 15 guys together and growing a culture and getting to know each other and you know, just seeing them grow. So, you know, I'm a basketball coach first and foremost, but I will, you know, hopefully run some camps here in the next summer when, you know, gyms are able to be open and guys can get back into a normal way of life. Cause I would love to give back to my, you know, my hometown. It's, you know, it's where I'm from. It's where I started my training business. And obviously, I mean, I don't live there anymore, but it would be nice to continue to, you know, see those kids year after year grow. So at least bare minimum, some camps and clinics here and there in the future.
Okay. I just have one more question about, it's a basketball question, about when you were talking about they need to talk in defense. If there are coaches now, they listen to this, they will say, they don't do it. I try to do it, but they don't do it. And it's... This discussion is every time. Every coach always starts it. You have to talk. You have some insights. How do you do it? Okay, you already told us about the drills, but how do you do this? How do you help the kids to start talking in defense?
What's the buy-in?
It's not, that's a great question. And honestly, I wish I could give you like a one solution for all. But for me, it's just a lead by example thing. Like here's a group of 14 kids, August 27th, that don't know me that well. I'm going to play for 40 minutes every single day for the first 2 months and talk while I play and show them, hey, I'm outworking you on film. Your head coach, who's 33 and was an average basketball player at a Division III level, is talking every possession while you're not. But there's one part about that that, you know, I would always question is how in shape are your players? Because you can't talk if you're not in shape. And that's the biggest key. But to your point, the buy-in is, for me, it's because that's how I am. So it's been a little easier for me, but I've seen gyms and great coaches. I've seen great coaches that struggle to get their guys to talk on a, you know, possession by possession basis. Could be a personality thing. We have a very quiet kid from Europe here and it kills me. Like you're literally not playing because you can't get out of your shell personality wise and speak a little more on the court, but it's tough, man. That is not an easy thing to do. If I was a 4-year college coach, I feel like it'd be a bit easier because those guys get a year older, but I got guys for a year here. So it is tough to instill those things, you know, over the course of 5-6 months, no doubt.
Yeah. It's something really strange. You have some players who do it by themselves and then players who, like you said, their personnel, they're very quiet, but sometimes it's, yeah, you get some loss. Or how do you say some loss, or you get some buckets because of they don't talk or they don't talk good. And this right. is really difficult because you try to put it in practices, but I tried everything
Listen, Mike, I don't know much. I just know what I know. And I know it's hard to teach communication. It's been hard for me. And it's hard for me even when I'm out there leading it. So it is a tough thing. It's no joke. A lot of it has to do with chemistry and care and investment. You know, kids say they care, but if you care enough, you would understand the importance of communicate. Because for me, I feel like I could dictate an entire possession. You're good left. Stay. Hey, switch that back screen coming. I'm fine. I got front door. I got help. I feel like I can control it like an NFL quarterback. But only so many kids understand that value or get to that point. And when they do, they're probably going to win championships in their career, but that's a tough thing, man. That is not easy at all.
Yeah, it's really tough, but it's a good one to discuss with other coaches. And maybe there's one day, maybe if all coaches give one thing, maybe we have at the end one day a solution to get it. But I already see Gunnar doing like this.
Let me know. Let me know when you get it.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah. The biggest thing as a coach is to do it, to incorporate it in your culture, to do it on a daily basis. And I think a lot of coaches struggle with teaching communication because they focus on it 1 week and then 3 weeks later they work on offensive skills and then they go, oh yeah, right, we should talk more in defense. I think you should work on it on a daily basis and that's already a big step. And then, yeah, like you said, the buy-in is, if you come in the gym, you're talking. And, if you breed defense as a coach, I think it's a huge step to teach it to those kids. So,
Well, Mike, I'll say this. The other big part is they might do it in practice, but not in games. So for us, we try to make our communication travel. In warmups, we have a very unique warmup. We don't do layup lines until 4 minutes left in warmups. And what we do is we put 4 numbered mats down, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And we have 4 different actions and the kids dictate this entire station of our warmup. And number one is a closeout. So when they yell number one, one player has to yell ball, ball, ball. The guy behind him says, you're good. I got your back. You're good. I got your back. We say number two, it's a switch. He runs over to two, switch, switch. The other kid says, got it, got it. Number three is a ball screen. He'll say screen left. We go over screen, right. We go under. And number four is a back screen. So what we try to do more so than just memorizing that, we try to get our kids into an opposing gym and start talking as loud as possible in front of them. Whether there's 10 people there, 100 people there, we're talking, we're live, we're loud, we're dapping, we're clapping. And that helps. That definitely helps.
It helps. Gunnar always says, it doesn't matter what you say sometimes in Belgium, man. Just talk and other players already are, why are you talking? And they start. So I like the warm-up thing when you when you're coming in an opposing team, gym, start talking and they get a good one.
Yeah, no doubt.
Nice. Coach, we're really digging in on the defensive part. But I know a lot of coaches like to talk offensively. what's the strength of your team offensively? Is there like, I know we don't want to dig in a lot on offense, but maybe you can share something about your culture or the philosophy of at Spire.
Yeah, good question. I think this year's group, well, first off, you know, I had an incoming or a future recruit's dad ask me, how do you play? You know, how do you play offensively? Is my son going to fit in? And my answer to that is we'll play however gets the job done. So if I have 6-7 footers next year, we're obviously going to play a little different than how we're fully equipped this year. But this year's team is very unique. We have positionless, tall, lanky players. So our assist numbers are through the roof. I think we would be fifth. If we were a Division I program, we'd be fifth in the country in assists out of 350 teams. And then the way we execute our half court offense hardly involves dribbling. It really is just about making people miscommunicate, and we're catching them on an action and we're slipping them, catching for a layup. So right now our 2-point percentage is, I think it would be top 50 in the country. We're catching and we're finishing a lot of twos. So that is how, in a nutshell, how we're constructed. You know, we do have some ball screen sets and we do have some deliberate post-ups, but we have a very positionless offense in which every single player knows every single spot. So our center could run the point, our center could start on the nail, our center could start on the right wing, left wing, or the trail. And everybody could do that, make or miss seamlessly. And that takes a lot of time, but that's what you have when you're a head coach of a post-grad program. So,
yeah, I can imagine. And that's, it's nice that you mentioned it, that your play, your center plays on the guard position as well, because that's also a challenge in Belgium. If at the, for example, if you look at an under 14 team and they got a big guy, the only thing he needs to do in most cases, not always, is just run the floor, get your position under the basket as the ball and put it in.
But right,
they never learn how to dribble, how to handle pressure full court, and then they stop growing. And when they're turning 20 years old, they're a point guard. And I think, yeah, that's also a big problem in Belgian basketball. I think we should focus more on the overall development of a player at a young age. Because I play in the first team at our club, and sometimes you see young players joining in practice, 16, 17, 18 years old. And they can only do one thing because they have been taught as a point guard or they have been taught as a center player, and then they need to play on the perimeter and they have issues. So it's good that you mentioned it, I think. And I try to do it with my under 14 team. It's not always easy because players say, no, but I can't dribble good enough to do it. No, you can't do it because you never learn how to do it and you never dare to do it. So,
right.
Yeah, we need to challenge ourselves and our players. So it's good that you talk about it.
I 100% agree with you. No doubt. That's the way the world's going anymore. That's the way the game's going. So when we're looking for recruiting, we're not looking for really one trick ponies, like a kid who could only post up. We would love to have a kid who could defend 1-5 and be our center, so to speak. So,
yeah. And we don't have a lot of very big fives anymore, I think. We have if you look in Europe, you have like Tavares. He played for Cleveland, for the Cavs. Tavares is a real big five. You have, for the rest, I don't think there's a real big five. And I think when we have more four or five players who can shoot the ball, who can play one-on-one, like Jan Vesely of Fenerbahce, I really like this guy. He played for the Wizards, I think.
Vesely, what was the last name?
Jan Vesely, it's from Czechia.
Yes. It's
7-8 years. He didn't do it well in the NBA, but this guy in Europe, this guy is good. He's 2'13", I think. I don't know what is the size in 2'13" is in USA, but this guy can dribble, can play one-on-one. Okay, shooting is not that good, but he's athletic.
Yep. I remember him. I remember him in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe one just fun question. What do you think the dribble two-pointers, they're coming back in the game? Attacking and the two-pointers.
Yeah.
I had this discussion last week with someone, and now you see a lot on Instagram and Facebook. You have the boards when you see the three-pointers, they're not no two-pointers anymore.
Right.
What do you think about this? This is a fun question.
Well, firstly, I think if you're referencing anything about the NBA, the NBA is just a different thing, like a different entity totally. But what I will say is the long two killed us last week. So it certainly wasn't ineffective for the team that we played because they had about six pull-up jumpers in our zone. And that was the shot we thought we wanted. And they hit every single one of them. But, you know, I just think, man, if these kids are so skilled anymore, that you got to shoot the three if you're near the three. I mean, there's no real need.
Maybe a good question. Do you think the coach of the other team, or maybe you know him, trains more on the dribble pull-up? Because now I start thinking more coaches and also me, when I give some training, sometimes I think, okay, we have to do more the dribble pull-up because of the defense. They start doing more the closeouts and getting the 3 points away. So maybe we have to practice back more to the dribble pull-up.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tool that if you have, that's great that you have it. My question is always, let's say that, you know, people are rotating and they're running you off the line and you're thinking about the pull-up. What percentage of those runoffs still go to another shooter for a wide open catch and shoot three? So, you know, I think if you're bailing somebody out, if you're in rotation offensively and you're thinking of that pull-up, because I think you can get 2 feet in the paint and find another wide open shooter. But you know, to each his own. Like, there might be a coach out there that's like, you know what, we're shooting the long two because my kids have that in their bag. Our starting point guard has a mid-range game, and I'm not going to tell him not to shoot it. I mean, he really can shoot it well there. So,
no, I like the fact of the one more pass and getting the open three. I think this is for my team. They always do this, and it's very effective. So, but sometimes I think, yeah, we have to practice a little bit more the pull-up jumper, but it's a really difficult shot. Because sometimes if you're right-handed and you have to pull it dribble to the right and you have to do the pull-up, it's not easy. With your opposite hand, it's more easy to do the pull-up. Yeah, it's a really difficult shot. People don't know, think it's easy, but...
No, it's tough. I don't know. I didn't have it in my game. I had a floater. If I was anywhere near the... in the mid, I would shoot a floater from the foul line. So I can't help you there.
No, just a fun question because of the game is always evolving, always.
Yeah,
it's crazy how it goes, and it's with some trends. And in 10 years, maybe also for me, the 3-point line is getting further and further now. Kids are shooting 1 meter behind the 3-point line, it's crazy, but it's difficult. Like for a coach, it's difficult because now, yeah, before it was okay, we have to play defense there on the 3-point line a little bit higher, but now you have to be 1 meter, 2 meters, and it's crazy.
I'll tell you the thing about basketball that has been affected positively the most is the high post area, because it's wide open. I mean, the teams that are playing these zones and have to extend their zone out to these shooters, you have, if somebody loves the high post, and even if they didn't, there's a role for you on a team to be a great high post shooter or facilitator, but because these zones are just getting stretched, these kids are shooting them so deep. We play on a NBA court here, the Cleveland Cavaliers court. So our kids, opposing teams come in and they see the NBA line and then they're shooting 3 or 4 feet behind that. And we know that's a miss, but you still got to honor it. You know, you still got to get out and get a hand. So it's, yeah, you're playing defense from far away from the rim anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah. And if you then have a good center who can play good on the short roll, that's why I like Hines of Milan. It's an American, Kyle Hines, yep. And he's playing it perfectly. But he trains it every day. He told it in the clinic somewhere. But this is really important.
Yep, I agree.
It is. Coach, maybe one last question. Have you set some specific goals for yourself during the years, or where do you see yourself in the long term, or where do you want to see yourself in the long term?
Yeah, now good question. I'm a singular focus guy. Like, I'm worried about our practice plan in 2 hours here. You know what I mean? But when the season ends, I'll try to diffuse a little bit and reevaluate and see where I'm at. I'm in a great position. You know, I have my own program. I get to recruit kids across the world, like Dick DeWild. So it's been amazing. It's rewarding. I get to call college coaches and answer their calls about our kids and hopefully, you know, place them. We have a kid getting recruited by an Ivy League. So it's been very, very rewarding for me and obviously for the players. But for me, man, I'm just taking it a day at a time. Like, I've turned down a lot of opportunities collegiately because I just didn't think I was ready or it just wasn't the right fit. And I've also been a little bit spoiled because I've been a head coach since my 20s, which not a lot of people get to be. So I know I have it good here and it's been amazing. I'm blessed. I'm grateful. But at the end of the day, if it's going to be anywhere, it has to be a place where I can learn and grow. You know, that's just, I'm a basketball junkie. This is all I do. I don't have kids. I'm not married. Like, this is it. Like, this is it. And it's not, people think I'm joking. Recruits and their parents ask me questions. I said, look, you can go to another school and there might be another coach out there that knows way more than me, but they do not have the time I have because this is all I do. I watch film every night. I have no life, you know, so this is my baby, man. I love it. I love this game. I love learning. And wherever I am, it just has to be conducive to learning.
Mm-hmm. Great answer, coach. I think I share the same philosophy. It's all about lifelong learning. And as John Wooden said, don't live in the future, just live in the now. Just do what you do, and the outcome will follow. So, great insight, coach. I think we had a great conversation. It was a totally different podcast as all the others because we really talked about defense, the defensive end. Really appreciate it, coach, that you joined us today to talk about it, to share your vision, to share your experience. At Spire and your previous experiences in Australia. So thanks a lot, coach. Wish you all the best for the rest of the season. And make sure to say hi to Vic from us.
Yeah, will do, guys. I appreciate you having me. Honestly, it's been fun talking basketball. And like I said, it's not to each his own. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. And I always love talking to people that love the game. So that's all that matters to me. I've learned just from talking to you. And obviously down the road, let's keep in touch. I hope everything goes well with your podcast. So best of luck. And maybe I'll get out there soon. Who knows? I'm a traveler. So who knows? I might be out there in the summer.
Okay, guys. Would be great. Take care, coach.
All right, guys. Take care. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Allee, nu naar de Joris Willer.
Ah ja, aan mijn zevende, hè?
Ja, merci, makker.
Yo.
Yo, ciao, ciao. Ja.
Thanks for listening to The Huddle. This season, we are already 25 episodes in. And we want to thank you for the support. See you next week.